His life was more occupied with affairs than ever before, and the writing of these memoirs was reserved for his playtime in Scotland. For a few weeks each summer, we retired to our little bungalow on the moors at Altnagar to enjoy the simple life, and it was there that Mr. Carnegie did most of his writing. He delighted in going back to those early times, and as he wrote, he lived them all over again. He was thus engaged in July 1914, when the war clouds began to gather, and when the fateful news of the 4th of August reached us, we immediately left our retreat in the hills and returned to Skibo to be more in touch with the situation. These memoirs ended at that time. Henceforth, he was never able to interest himself in private affairs. Many times he made the attempt to continue writing, but found it useless. Until then, he had lived the life of a man in middle life, and a young one at that, golfing, fishing, swimming each day, sometimes doing all three in one day. Optimist as he always was and tried to be, even in the face of the failure of his hopes, the world disaster was too much. His heart was broken. A severe attack of influenza, followed by two serious attacks of pneumonia, precipitated old age upon him. It was said of a contemporary who passed away a few months before Mr. Carnegie that he never could have borne the burden of old age. Perhaps the most inspiring part of Mr. Carnegie's life, to those who were privileged to know it intimately, was the way he bore his burden of old age. Always patient, considerate, cheerful, grateful for any little pleasure or service, never thinking of himself, but always of the dawning of a better day. His spirit ever shone brighter and brighter until he was not, for God took him. Written with his own hand on the flyleaf of his manuscript are these words. It is probable that material for a small volume might be collected from these memoirs, which the public would care to read, and that a private and larger volume might please my relatives and friends. Much I have written from time to time may, I think, wisely be omitted. Whoever arranges these notes should be careful not to burden the public with too much. A man with a heart as well as a head should be chosen. Who, then, could so well fill this description as our friend Professor John C. Van Dyke? When the manuscript was shown to him, he remarked, without having read Mr. Carnegie's notation, "It would be a labor of love to prepare this for publication." Here, then, the choice was mutual, and the manner in which he has performed this labor proves the wisdom of the choice, a choice made and carried out in the name of a rare and beautiful friendship. Louise Whitfield Carnegie, New York, April 16, 1920.
Editor's note: the story of a man's life, especially when it is told by the man himself, should not be interrupted by the hecklings of an editor. He should be allowed to tell the tale in his own way, and enthusiasm, even extravagance in recitation, should be received as a part of the story. The quality of the man may underlie exuberance of spirit, as truth may be found in apparent exaggeration. Therefore, in preparing these chapters for publication, the editor has done little more than arrange the material chronologically and sequentially, so that the narrative might run on unbrokenly to the end. Some footnotes by way of explanation, some illustrations that offer sight, help to the text, have been added, but the narrative is the thing. This is neither the time nor the place to characterize or eulogize the maker of this strange, eventful history, but perhaps it is worthwhile to recognize that the history really was eventful and strange. Nothing stranger ever came out of the Arabian Nights than the story of this poor Scotch boy who came to America and, step by step, through many trials and triumphs, became the great steel master, built up a colossal industry, amassed an enormous fortune, and then, deliberately and systematically, gave away the whole of it for the enlightenment and betterment of mankind. Not only that, he established a gospel of wealth that can be neither ignored nor forgotten, and set a pace in distribution that succeeding millionaires have followed as a precedent. In the course of his career, he became a nation builder.